Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ormudu, and welcome to Health Chat. Get this, there were 212 million malaria cases worldwide in 2015. This sounds alarming, right? However, the World Health Organization says the incidence of malaria has decreased in the world by 21% between 2010 and 2015. Most victims of malaria are children under the age of 5 who live in sub-Saharan Africa. Pregnant women are also very vulnerable to the mosquito-borne disease. We will discuss malaria on the program today. And joining us via phone from Baltimore, Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C., is Elaine Roman, Project Director with the Tip Top Project, Transforming IPT for Optimal Pregnancy Project. That's what Tip Top stands for. Ms. Roman, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have with us on the phone joining us from Baltimore is Dr. Emmanuel Dipo Otolorin. He's Senior Regional Technical and Programmatic Advisor of Tip Top in Nigeria. Thank you so much, Dr. Otolorin, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we will start discussing malaria in a moment, but first, here is a report.
It's being called the malaria parasite's Achilles heel, a protein that the parasite, Plasmodium falciparum, uses to infect red blood cells. By blocking the protein called PFAP2I, the malaria parasite cannot enter the cells where it replicates billions of times before bursting forth into the bloodstream. The hallmark symptoms of malaria, including high fever and chills, come in waves every 48 hours each time the parasite reproduces, halting the so-called invasion phase. According to lead researcher Manuel Yinas, could potentially stop the infection, offering a cure.
Invasion has been, for a long time, considered, you know, one of the key parasite-specific processes that, if inhibited, would then prevent the full-blown massive infections that one normally gets.
Yinas and colleagues at Pennsylvania State University have identified and characterized PFAP2I, finding that it regulates more than 150 parasitic genes, nearly 20% of which are known to be involved in red cell invasion. The findings are reported in the journal Cell Host and Microbe. For the past 50 years, Yinas says researchers have been trying to find a way to attack the invasion phase, typically with vaccines that harness the immune system. Because the parasite has dozens of mechanisms that pull it into red blood cells after attaching to their surface, Yinas says it's hard to raise an immune response to block them all. Yinas says a compound that interferes with the parasite's PFAP2I protein has the potential to stop invasion in a single action.
You will ultimately impact a very large number of genes that are involved in invasion, but you only need to target one protein specifically, and that's the AP2I protein, because if it doesn't function properly, it's never turning on this large set of invasion genes that are required for that process to actually ever occur.
Yinas says the next step is to actually develop a drug that targets the parasitic protein. In addition to a possible cure, an agent that blocks PFAP2I has the potential to break the transmission cycle, since there would be few, if any, daughter parasites in the bloodstream to infect biting mosquitoes. There are an estimated 212 million cases of malaria each year, and the disease kills 429,000 people, most of them young children, in sub-Saharan Africa. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
So, Ms. Roman and Dr. Otolorin, thank you so much again for joining us on Health Chat today. Let me start with you, Dr. Otolorin. Can you give us a sense of the issue of malaria? We know that sub-Saharan Africa is very vulnerable. Children under the age of 5, as I mentioned earlier, are definitely most of the victim. Can you give us a sense of what is happening on the continent?
Thank you very much. Well, the problem is that many countries in sub-Saharan Africa are in an endemic area for malaria. And what that means is that mosquitoes that transmit the disease thrive in those areas. And they bite infected persons. And then when they bite uninfected persons, these people get infected and then they transmit the disease. In many other parts of the world, malaria has been eliminated, but because we have an environment, particularly around the tropical area where the temperature encourages breeding grounds for mosquitoes, mm-hmm. we do have this transmission. But there are low-cost solutions that WHO has proposed. Of course, the most important is to prevent mosquitoes biting people through the use of insecticide-treated bed nets and other and appropriate case detection and treatment. Mm-hmm. So in Africa, these interventions have been promoted. So we've had mass campaigns for net distribution. We also have increased access to drugs that can be used to treat those who have malaria. And we are beginning to see a decline, but the decline is not fast enough for us to move very, very quickly to elimination of the disease in the country, in the continent.
In the continent. And, I mean, it's incredible to know that there are different ways that prevention can be implemented. However, so many people are victims, especially children and pregnant women. Ms. Roman, would you please tell us about how malaria is affecting pregnant women?
Thank you. Yes, pregnant women are particularly vulnerable to the infection. And what malaria does in pregnancy is it lends to increased rates of severe maternal anemia, which lends to low birth weight babies. And so we really see a trickle negative down effect from the mother to her fetus to the newborn. And so as Dr. Otolorum was saying, we really want to aim to prevent malaria in pregnancy so it doesn't affect the mother or her newborn baby.
Okay, so when we look at prevention, looking at specifically the case of pregnant women, what are we seeing in terms of what is being suggested by World Health Organization or even your organization? What are the steps that are recommended for pregnant women?
Thank you. Well, the good news is we do have the tools for prevention. The World Health Organization recommends and Japaigo promotes a three-pronged approach in pregnancy where women are living in moderate to high malaria transmission areas. And that's generally sub-Saharan Africa. So the first is, which was mentioned earlier, making sure that the pregnant woman is sleeping under an insecticide-treated bed net. The second one is giving her a full treatment dose of an anti-malarial at least three times during her pregnancy, beginning as early as possible in the second trimester, and we call that intermittent preventive treatment. And then in addition to that, we want to make sure that any pregnant woman who has signs or symptoms of malaria immediately seeks care for diagnosis, and if she tests positive, receives appropriate treatment.
Mm. And Dr. Tolorin, can you expand a little more on the intermittent preventive treatment? How often do pregnant women have to take this treatment? What type of treatment are we talking about? And how much access do they have, especially in remote settings like villages?
Okay, let me just first of all explain what happens when malaria affects pregnant women. Mm-hmm. The parasites generally go to the site of the placenta of the baby. And this is a very important organ responsible for the transfer of food and oxygen from the mother to the baby to allow for the baby to grow normally. But in the cases of malaria in pregnancy, these parasites block this placenta site and prevent the transfer. So the babies end up not getting enough food or oxygen, so they tend not to grow very well, and so they are low birth weight, and quite frankly, some of them may die either before delivery or soon after delivery. So what we're trying to do with the preventive treatment is to assume that every pregnant woman does have malaria, and therefore give them a drug, which is sulfadoxin pyrimethamine, give them that drug at least every month until they deliver. This helps to clear the malaria parasites from the blood, as well as from the area of the placenta, and reduce the effect of this malaria on the baby. So we know that if women receive at least 3 doses, the chances of having very severe anemia in the mother, or having babies being born small or dying during pregnancy, is reduced. And this is a low-cost intervention. And the challenge is that not every pregnant woman goes to the antenatal clinic to take advantage of this intervention. So we are trying to increase access by reaching out to women, advising them to go to the antenatal clinic when pregnant as early as possible, so that this treatment can begin in the second trimester, which is after 3 months of pregnancy. And every month they should receive the dose in order to have the most benefit.
So does it mean that in between the treatment, given that the treatment is not continuous or steady, in case someone gets infected with malaria, they will not develop the disease? Is that
yes, accurate? They are unlikely to develop the disease, because one dose of this drug is likely to last the blood for about a month.
Okay. So then let's talk about access. And I know that we will definitely talk about the Tip Top Project, which is a JPIGO supported project, and you can tell me more about it, Ms. Roman. Before we talk about this specific project, how it's helping a pregnant woman, I wanted to know at this point what type of improvement you have seen. You perhaps, Ms. Roman, you can comment on that. We talked about the improvement. There has been a reduction in the rate of malaria in general, according to the WHO. What type of improvement have we seen? If we're not talking specifically about pregnant women, but looking at the general picture, we know that children under 5 are also very much the most affected population. So what have we seen, and what needs to be stepped up if we don't necessarily talk about pregnant women right now?
Well, in the last 15 years, what's really been remarkable and lent quite a bit to reducing the malaria morbidity across the world has been sort of the advent and introduction of new tools to fight malaria. This includes insecticide-treated bed nets that have been made more accessible to pregnant women, young children, as well as families. Also, the introduction of rapid diagnostic tests that give clinicians and healthcare providers the tools to be able to quickly diagnose malaria where microscopy is not, or microscopes are not available. And also the introduction of better drugs, combination drugs, or what we call artemisinin and combination therapy. All of these things have really lent to great reductions in the morbidity of malaria. For pregnant women specifically, we've also seen good progress across countries, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. We've seen in the last 5 to 10 years increased coverage of intermittent preventive treatment, but we're still not there yet. And I do think it really comes down to access. Mm-hmm. We know that pregnant women will come for antenatal care services often once. Over 90% of pregnant women in Africa will come at least once during their pregnancy. But then we see a really drastic, sharp drop after that. And so part of what we need to be thinking about going forward, and what we're looking at in the projects that we support, is how do we increase that access, and how do we ensure that the pregnant woman has every opportunity to get the intermittent preventive treatment during her pregnancy?
Okay, access is such an important component in all of this. And we are going to talk more about addressing malaria. We'll talk about the TIP-TOP project and look at what is being done, where we're coming from, and where we are going in terms of fighting malaria. We will continue our discussion in a moment. It's time for a short break. Ms. Roman, Dr. Tolorin, stick around. We'll be right back.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is our moment. Together with footballers like Steven Pienaar, we are speaking out to end malaria.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Let's do it.
United, we can beat malaria.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing malaria, and our guests are Aileen Roman. She's project director with the TIP-TOP, Transforming IPT for Optimal Pregnancy Project, and Dr. Emmanuel Otolorin. He's senior regional technical and programmatic advisor. And before the break, we talked a lot about pregnant women and what is the situation and what is being done. And Ms. Roman, I would like you to tell us more about the TIP-TOP project and help us understand how this approach, which is a new program to be implemented in the next 5 years, will help in curbing the incidence of malaria among pregnant women.
Sure, thank you. Let me start by building on what we were talking about earlier in terms of access, which has been a real challenge in women accessing comprehensive ANC. When we think about malaria and pregnancy, we are really thinking about a component of comprehensive care for that pregnant woman during her pregnancy. So it's very important that we think of it in the context of comprehensive reproductive health services, because malaria and pregnancy is really a maternal and newborn health disease. And so what TIP-TOP, the Transforming Intermittent Preventive Treatment for Optimal Pregnancy Project, is aiming to do is we're aiming to significantly reduce malaria and pregnancy by giving women more opportunity to access that care. And how are we doing that? It's really just a simple approach. We're introducing IPT at the community level in addition to antenatal care. So it's giving the pregnant woman the opportunity to receive IPT at community as well as at antenatal care services. And what's exciting to me about this project, it's a five-year project covering four countries, Nigeria, DR Congo, Mozambique, and Madagascar, is that often in projects you don't have the opportunity to really build and look at how an approach will work. And so what TIP-TOP is doing is, number one, we are generating the evidence through this project for the World Health Organization to be able to review their malaria and pregnancy policy in 5 years and possibly update their approach or policy for intermittent preventive treatment. In addition, and simultaneously, we are introducing this approach in countries at community level and really setting the stage for countries to be able to scale the approach as well as sustain it. And the third piece of this that's so important is introducing quality assured sulfadoxine pyrimethamine, which is the drug that we use for intermittent preventive treatment, and creating more demand for the drug at country level among providers as well as pregnant women. I also just want to mention our partners that we're working with. We're working with the Barcelona Institute for Global Health, who is supporting us on the research side. And we're also working very closely in collaboration with the World Health Organization, who's really helping to foster the partnership between reproductive health and malaria control partners. And then also Malaria for Medicine Venture, who is helping us to ensure that the product is available at country level in supporting increasing demand.
Okay. Now, tell us, how were the countries chosen to participate in this program?
That's a great question. So we had selection criteria. All countries needed to have national policies in place that were in line or harmonized with WHO's current policy. Countries also had to have community programs in place. No country right now is implementing community IPT, but they did have to have a community health worker program in place. And also a real cornerstone of selection was the Ministry of Health, not just buy-in to this project, but really their support and leadership. Because from the beginning, we are thinking about setting the stage for sustainability and scale up, as I said before. And so our position is very much to support ministries of health to drive their program. And so they are really in the leadership position to drive this project. And we are providing the technical support to them. So that was a big part of it as well.
Okay.
Another piece that was critical was because this project is generating evidence through research, we had to ensure that the country selection would be able to produce the evidence that WHO will need to be able to assess the evidence. So that's why we have some countries that have a large population, some countries have a smaller population, and we were also looking at geographical diversity as well.
Okay. Now, Dr. Otolorin, tell us about the implementation of the project on the ground where you are, Nigeria, and the region you cover.
Okay. So this project will be implemented in two phases. And phase one, each of the countries will be selecting some districts from which we will be recruiting pregnant women and also identifying community health workers. We'll be training the community health workers on the importance of malaria interventions in pregnancy, particularly the IPTP, which is the access to this special drug called sulfadoxine pyrimethamine. Globally, we need to have 100% of all pregnant women having access to this drug, but we only have 31% globally. In many of these countries, it's even less than 31% that have the access. This is why we are taking the drugs to them in the community, whilst also encouraging them to come to the health facility for additional benefits of antenatal care. As you know, in many of our countries in Africa, many women do not go to the antenatal clinic in time. They go maybe late, like sixth month of pregnancy, and therefore they will have missed the opportunity of getting medications much earlier, and the effects of malaria may become evident at that time. So we are counseling women about the importance of early booking, as soon as they are in the second trimester, which is after the third month of pregnancy, so that they can come to the antenatal clinic. And for those who are unable to come and are eligible for receiving these IPTP drugs, they will be given the drugs in the community and then referred. The WHO has recommended or estimated that we need about 8 contacts during each pregnancy, either in the clinic or at the house. So the earlier these pregnant women come to the clinic, the earlier they're beginning to get the benefit. So after phase one of the project, which is about 2 years, we will be recruiting about 10,000 pregnant women in each country and making sure they receive at least 3 doses of the SP drug. And then we will look at the evidence that we've generated and then expand to additional districts in the phase two of the project so that we can demonstrate that the successes achieved in phase one can be replicated in other districts within each country. So this is how we are planning to do this. It's a two-phase project.
So when does this start exactly?
It has already started.
Mm-hmm.
All the countries have started the project. We are doing some studies now. We are doing some rapid assessment of health facilities to determine their readiness to provide these malaria and pregnancy services. We will be doing a household survey, a baseline household survey, to determine where we are starting from, what proportion of women have received at least 1, 2, or 3 doses of the medication. This will be at baseline. And after 2 years, we will do a midline assessment to find out if we have increased the proportion of women receiving the minimum of 3 doses. And then at the end of the project, we'll do an end-line evaluation. So this project has started. We are doing all of these baseline studies, collecting data to know where we are before we start the interventions. And shortly, we will be doing training for facility-based healthcare workers who will be supervising the community health workers. And then we'll also train community health workers on what the project is all about.
Okay. And Ms. Roman, how will you measure impact and determine success for this project?
That's a great question. So what we want to achieve by the end of 5 years in the areas that we're working in countries, the sites that we're working, we want to see at least 50% of pregnant women achieving IPT3 in their sites. And then or pregnant women receiving 3 doses of IPT. In addition to that, we want to make sure that antenatal care attendance maintains or goes up. And we expect that it will actually go up given the approach that we are using. In addition, because TIP-TOP is supporting a preventative measure for malaria and pregnancy, we expect that it will contribute to reducing maternal and neonatal mortality in the sites that we are working.
Dr. Tolorin, Ms. Roman, we're getting ready to wrap. But before we finish, let me have your final word, starting with you, Ms. Roman.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure and delight to speak with you today and raise the importance of addressing malaria and pregnancy, which really has devastating consequences for pregnant women and their young babies. I'd also like to thank our donor, Unitaid, for their support and commitment in partnership with us, Jabaigo, to really make an impact in the lives of women and their babies.
Great. And Dr. Tolorin, any final words?
Yes, thank you very much. Well, malaria kills too many pregnant women in Africa, and the solutions are low-cost solutions. And I think I just want to encourage our government at all levels and the citizens to take advantage of these low-cost solutions that are now available for reducing this burden.
Fantastic. Dr. Tolorin, Ms. Roman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guests, Ellen Roman, Project Director with the TIP-TOP Project, and Dr. Emmanuel Otolorin, his Senior Regional Technical and Programmatic Advisor of TIP-TOP, which is a project managed by Jepaigo. We thank all of you for listening to today's Health Chat. For more on the topic and today's show, log on to our website at voanews.com/healthchat. Until next time, I'm your host, Lino Mudu. with producer Kwame Ofori. Take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Joe Palka.